Drug distributors had offered $18 billion to settle a massive opioid addiction lawsuit, but now more than 20 states have rejected it.
This offer was seen as a first step towards getting toward that global resolution, and it's going to be back to the drawing board or back to the negotiating table now.
And Democrats are gearing up to defend their control of the House in the November election.
Those districts that the president won by 10 or more points are definitely the most at risk on their votes over impeachment.
It's Friday, February 14th. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. The U.S. government and the Afghan Taliban have agreed to the first step of a peace deal, according to a senior Trump administration official. The two sides have agreed to what negotiators call a reduction in violence over a 7-day period that's set to begin soon. If that holds, it could lead to further talks about reducing U.S. forces in Afghanistan. The Afghan War, America's longest, has been going on for more than 18 years. About 13,000 U.S. troops are still in the country. The Justice Department has closed its investigation into Andrew McCabe, the former deputy director of the FBI, without bringing charges, according to McCabe's lawyers. The U.S. Attorney's Office had been looking into whether McCabe misled investors about having confirmed the existence of a probe into the Clinton Foundation to a reporter for The Wall Street Journal back in October 2016, allegations McCabe has long disputed. McCabe had been criticized by President Trump and was fired just hours before he was scheduled to retire. The Pentagon has dropped its opposition to a proposed rule that would make it harder for U.S. chipmakers and other companies to supply China's Huawei technologies. The Defense Department had stood in contradiction to the Trump administration, which is now stepping up its campaign to persuade allies that Huawei's gear poses a security threat. Meanwhile, Huawei is pushing back on a federal indictment unsealed this week that charged the Chinese tech giant and two U.S. subsidiaries with racketeering conspiracy and conspiracy to steal trade secrets. Huawei says the charges are unfounded. Huawei is the world's largest telecommunications equipment manufacturer and a leader in next-generation 5G wireless networks. And Michael Avenatti, the former lawyer for adult film actress Stormy Daniels, has been found guilty of trying to extort more than $20 million from Nike. Avenatti had threatened to expose what he said was corruption by Nike in connection with high school basketball players if the company didn't pay another one of his clients, an amateur basketball coach, and hire Avenatti to conduct an internal investigation. Federal prosecutors were aided by Nike's lawyers, who recorded conversations. Avenatti still faces a federal indictment in California related to his business practices, taxes, and personal finances, and separate embezzlement charges in New York. He's pleaded not guilty in those cases, which are set for trial later this year. The nation's opioid crisis has claimed hundreds of thousands of lives over the past two decades. The drug industry is facing lawsuits from virtually every state and thousands of city and county governments, all saying the industry is to blame for causing widespread addiction. Three drug wholesalers, McKesson, AmerisourceBergen, and Cardinal Health, had offered to pay $18 billion to settle many of the lawsuits. But now the attorneys general from 21 states have rejected that offer. Here with the details on the rejection and what it means for any kind of settlement in the future is The Wall Street Journal's Jared Hopkins. Jared, the Journal reviewed a letter sent by state AGs to the company's lawyers. What were their reasons for turning the offer down?
The letter was fairly general, but essentially it outlined that to achieve a global settlement for the wholesale distributor companies in the drug industry, that this current offer, this framework, would not get there, which is $18 billion paid over 18 years by the three major drug wholesale companies.
So it wasn't big enough, and the offer was over too long a period of time?
Yeah, so there's a few reasons for the rejection. Some states are targeting more money overall, so more than the $18 billion. Some are also asking that the money be paid more quickly than over 18 years. So there's some differing viewpoints here from the states who want to go at this again and see something different.
Did all of the states, in fact, reject the settlement?
So no, there are a handful of states that are supportive of this settlement proposal, including four states that are leading, have been leading the negotiations, which are North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. And it should be noted that all the states involved and all the distributors are still in negotiations. They're still in talks. The focus point here on what appears to have fallen apart is the $18 billion offer and how that would be structured at this, at the most recent point.
Jared, isn't this litigation between 21 states and the three wholesalers the tip of the iceberg? I mean, aren't there thousands of opioid lawsuits directed at the pharmaceutical industry?
Yeah, there's more than 2,000 lawsuits that have been brought against drug manufacturers, drug wholesalers, large retail pharmacy chains, most from local city and county governments. Most of those have been consolidated before a federal judge in Cleveland. They're involved in all these negotiations because the local governments, as well as the states, as well as the industry, have said that they want to reach some massive, widespread, broad agreement to resolve all of the sprawling opioid litigation, which has proven to be difficult because there are obviously competing factions, differing interests. You've got local governments, state governments, and it's been going on now for several years.
Is that what makes this sort of unique, Jared? You know, the fact that cities and communities have had to bear the costs of addiction, you know, these lawsuits, as opposed to other industries?
Yes, so that's the main core here of what these lawsuits are over. They've accused these companies of their of helping spark the opioid crisis and are trying to recover some of the costs that have gone into dealing with the crisis from EMS and legal authorities such as police and local charges like that, as well as dealing with anything in the public sector of funds that have gone towards addressing the opioid crisis in these communities.
And again, as you said, both sides are continuing to negotiate.
Yeah, and that's an important element here, this rejection doesn't mean that there's no talks going on. These attorneys general and the distributors are continuing to talk. But what's significant here is that this was seen as a first step when this was first reported back last year. This offer was seen as a first step towards getting toward that global resolution. And it's going to be back to the drawing board or back to the negotiating table now.
The Wall Street Journal's Jared Hopkins. Thanks a lot, Jared.
Thank you.
The fight to control the House of Representatives is heating up. In the wake of President Trump's impeachment trial, a key question is whether the Democratic majority in the House might be in jeopardy. There are 30 seats held by Democrats in districts won by Mr. Trump in 2016. Here to assess the battle for the House is Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Natalie Andrews. So, Natalie, House reps are campaigning. What issues will Democrats and Republicans be campaigning on?
Expect to hear Democrats talk about local issues and how they want to lower the cost of health care. It's something that they campaigned on when they won the House in 2018, and they're going to keep talking about it. Republicans, on the other hand, are going to hammer Democrats on impeachment. They are looking at districts. They're looking to win back districts that the president won in 2016. And so they want to hammer these Democrats for impeaching the president rather than working with him.
Are the Democrats in the aforementioned swing districts thought to be in trouble because their party voted to impeach the president?
Those districts that the president won by 10 or more points are definitely the most at risk on their votes over impeachment. So these are Democrats that are in really red areas. They know that. They've been fundraising. They've been working and pushing local issues and trying to get legislation done for their districts. But it's going to be tough for them.
Could this swing control of the House back to the GOP?
It's not likely. History just shows in a presidential election year that majority doesn't change as often. And so Republicans are also looking out into the future. If they can shrink the majority that Democrats have, they have a better chance of taking the House in, say, 2022.
Have the Republicans tried to hammer Democrats on anything else other than impeachment, or is that the main thing?
Impeachment will be their focus, but certainly socialism. The Republicans have ran several ads connecting the centrist members to the more liberal members of their party, such as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the so-called squad that has pitched several more progressive ideas. These are centrist Democrats, so they don't endorse a lot of those ideas, but certainly Republicans would like to tie them together.
Well, is there an issue, Natalie, that worries Democrats more than impeachment at this point?
The number one issue worrying these moderate Democrats right now is who is going to be at the top of the ticket in the Democratic presidential race. They want to know who they're running with, and they're very worried that they could end up running with Bernie Sanders, who, as a self-avowed Democratic socialist, makes it hard for them to distance themselves from ideas they don't support, such as a Green New Deal or Medicare for All. When you're running in a presidential year, you're inevitably going to be tied with the person who's at the top of the ticket, which is why Republicans are going to run with Donald Trump and support him. And so Democrats who really have positioned themselves as moderates, as people who are in the center of the aisle, as people who want to get bipartisan legislation done, they're worried about running with a candidate who has staked out a position that is much more left than they are.
How has each party fared in the fundraising battle? Who's raised more money so far?
Democratic candidates, specifically these incumbents, have really built significant war chests for this race, which they were expecting to be tough. So vulnerable Democrats raised a collective $93 million last year, and 13 of those lawmakers are going into the election with $2 million in cash to spend. So they can spend that on TV ads. A lot of them are in districts with competitive media markets. Say there's a group in Pennsylvania, so they have to run in like a Philadelphia media market or New Jersey and stuff like that. So they are going to need that money, and they can send out mailers, they can employ more staff. Republicans have not fared as well in the fundraising, and they've actually been admonished by their leadership for it. Their leadership has said, hey, like, if we have to spend to save our members from losing, if we have to spend to protect incumbents, then it's going to make it harder for them to go on the offense and win seats this fall.
Do you think they've raised more money as a result of impeachment? Has the impeachment topic given them any sort of boost?
We really only have the January numbers to look at that for. And Republicans say they have gotten a boost. One thing that may indicate that is the National Republican Congressional Committee, the House Republicans campaign arm, did outraise the Democrats' campaign arm in January. That could be for impeachment. That could be because people are waking up to the fact that it's a campaign year. We'll have to see what the subsequent months do to really be able to credit it to something.
Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Natalie Andrews. Thanks a lot, Natalie.
For sure. Thank you.
And that's What's News for Friday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And a quick programming note, we'll be taking a break on Monday for the President's Day holiday. We'll join you again on Tuesday. I'm Charlie Turner for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.